My name is Russell Spatz. I'm an alcoholic member of the Carl Gables Group of Alcoholics Anonymous. This is a rowdy, crazy bunch. I've spoken in a lot of venues before, but it's kind of, and I can probably handle just about anything. And, you know, I am a trial lawyer, and I'm used to public speaking, but speaking from the ramparts of a castle. If this was on tape, they wouldn't know what I was talking about. But if it's possible, ignore that this thing is here, you know? I mean, I don't know whether I'm in a castle or I'm in prison or something. Because I want to talk about freedom. You know, I got to really, first of all, I want to thank the committee for inviting me. I'm absolutely convinced they have no idea what they're doing. When they called me up, I said they want to speak on steps 4 and 9, you know, as if that's going to actually happen, you know? The answer to the question of those who know me is no, I will not behave. But in any event, I was heartened by somebody in the committee who came up to me and said, listen, just let it rip, don't worry about it. And, you know, but it's an interesting deal that they would ask me to do steps, you know, I got whatever it is, an hour, 2 hours, 8 hours, whatever, until my plane leaves tomorrow morning for Laguna Beach at 5:30 in the morning. I got whatever time I got to speak on steps 4 through 9 and anything else I want to talk about. So I'm going to try to be brief. I was thinking I could do actually all the steps in less than 30 seconds. It's when you tell me to do it in like 45 minutes or an hour that it's difficult. But because it's really all about one thing. And I'm going to talk about that, and I want to talk about freedom. That's what I really want to talk about. I want to talk about freedom. Because, you know, at the end of step 9, it says you're going to know new freedom. And I'm going to tell you something. Most of the people in this room right now, and I'm not putting you down or anything, I don't know you anything, but I'm sure that most people in this room right now, they don't even know what they're talking about. Because you're thinking freedom, you're thinking an old freedom. Because they said you're going to know a new freedom. That means you're going to know a freedom that you've never had before. So whatever freedom you think you have right now, it's going to be a different deal. It's going to be a new freedom. It's going to be a new happiness. It's going to be a new deal. It's going to be something. It's going to be taken to a place that you have never been before. I don't care what's going on in your life right now. I don't care how bad it is, how good it is, what you're struggling with, what the deal is, what's waiting for you at the end of these things is something you've never experienced before. And I don't want you to miss that, and that's what I really want to talk about. I was reminded by Dave when we were talking about how long I'm going to be. He reminded me of once I was in court talking to a judge, and I stood up and I said, Judge, I'll be brief. And the judge said, Mr. Spatz, you couldn't say your last name in less than 5 minutes. So I want to sort of put in a little bit about my experience. I'm going to talk liberally from the big book. If you have a big book, whip it out to make sure I'm not lying to you. This stuff is all from the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm going to talk about something that's seldom talked about in meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm going to talk about the big book and what's written in the big book. I am convinced. Now listen, this is just an opinion. Look, I've been sober a little over 27 years. Isn't necessarily a long time in AA. It's a long time for me. My sponsor's got 53 years. There's people in here with longer time. But it's sober long enough. Obviously, I'm an alcoholic, so I have my opinions. You don't have to believe in any of them. I could be wrong. As a matter of fact, at the end of this talk, I'm going to explain to you something where I've just learned that everything I'm going to tell you here today, everything is absolutely wrong. So, I mean, listen to it if you want. Don't listen to it if you want. Maybe I'm your guy. Maybe I'm not your guy. You know, it's like a giant toolbox. AA. There's a wrench to fit every nut. Maybe I'll be a wrench, maybe not. It doesn't matter. Listen to all, because at the end, I'm going to explain to you something that just happened to me, which indicated to me that everything I'm going to tell you now is not correct anyway. So there's no need for you to get upset about it. You can listen to everything. You can feel everything. You can adopt everything. You can say, hey, he's right. And then at the end, I'm going to explain to you why I was totally wrong. And then you can't even be mad at me, because you say, how can I be mad at anything he said? He said he was wrong. Unless you think I'm right, and then it'll just be confusing. I have a theory about alcoholism. And here's my theory. And it's adopted basically from my experience. I'm going to talk a little bit about my experience, and not only it's your experience, but it is the deal. I believe that most of this book is invisible. I'm telling you. I mean, I know, I've been in meetings before. I know acceptance is the answer to all our problems. No, but I mean, I know there's cliches. I know there's stuff that people remember. I don't remember, they remember a lot of lines and a lot of things and a lot of stuff that makes them feel good and everything like that. I know there's stuff that we say in meetings that we think is the program of Alcoholics Anonymous that encapsulates the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, because there are lines that are taken from the big book. And I also know that 85 to 90% of what's put in this book is not talked about, read, or heard in Alcoholics Anonymous or even practiced. So I know that 80% of the people in Alcoholics Anonymous don't even work this program. They work a program that they think they're working. Somehow AA, in my opinion, has turned into something like this. You know, the big book says, rarely have we seen a person fail who has thoroughly followed our path. Doesn't it say that? When did it turn into, rarely have we seen a person fail who does whatever the heck they want to do? I mean, I think the big book says, if you do what we did, if you become what we became, if your life becomes, if you do what we did, you do it, you are going to get what we want. Where did it become? Do whatever you want to do, and you're going to get what we got anyway. I don't think it says that. So what I want to do is I want to read some things they said in the big book, which is invisible. Did you know there's invisible stuff in the big book that's never talked about? I'm telling you, there's invisible stuff. And it's all within 4 and 9 and 3 and all that sort of stuff. It's all within the steps. Not the stuff you think you're doing. I want to talk about the stuff they're not talking about in Alcoholics Anonymous these days. I want to start off. Well, first of all, I do want to mention, I see a lot of people I've seen before. A lot of people have been at my step meetings. I see Paul Lee's here. I want to single him out because he said he paid me some money for that. You know, and had a very nice breakfast with Lou F., who's somewhere in the audience there. And this morning, one of the speakers, Sunday morning speaker, wonderful guy. And we had a great talk. And, you know, the reason I like talking with old-timers, I think he's got, I don't know, it's 34, 45 years, whatever. I like talking about it because we started talking. And as we were talking, I realized that he understands this book the way I understand this book. You know, he said, hey, that's the deal. He agrees. It's always nice to find somebody that sort of like agrees with you, who has like 40 years. You know, so here's, you know, there's a line from T.S. Eliot. You know, here's the deal. I have 27 years. I cannot, now I don't want anybody to think that I thought this way, acted this way, believed this way when I had 27 days, or when I had 27 months, or 27 weeks, or 2.7 years. So if what I'm saying doesn't make any sense to you, doesn't mean anything to you, or you don't understand it, understand this. That doesn't mean if you get 27 years from now, whatever it is, you're not going to say, now I understand what that guy's talking about. Because this stuff, most of this stuff takes time. Takes a lot of time and perseverance to really happen. Because the truth is, the program is not about the steps. The program is not about that. Now, this is all my opinion. I know it's radical and it's crazy, but I want to try to explain to you. It's just not about the steps. The steps are tools. It's like building a house with a hammer and a nail and with whatever you use, and wood and whatever you use to build that house, and you get the house built, and then you spend the rest of the time worshiping the hammer and the nails. When the whole thing is about the house, this whole book is about building a relationship with God. It says, see to it that your relationship with Him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and not countless other, period. This whole thing is about God, your relationship with God. All the steps, every single step all along the way talks about how this is going to, how it's going to refine, harden, and take you to a place where your relationship with God is going to get even better. And then finally, to toss you on step number 11, which says, now that you've got it, now you're going to get even a greater relationship with Him, a more conscious relationship with Him. And then finally, when you fall down, finally, after step 9, when you're realizing the promises, it's the end of all the incredible stuff that's going to happen to you. It says, we finally see that He is doing for us what we could not do for ourselves. And then they go to step 12, they say, now tell other people about that. Which is probably why when Bill Dodson was sitting in his room 2 weeks sober and sitting there with his wife, Bill Dodson, Alcoholics Anonymous number 3, and staring at Bill Wilson and looking at him, and trying to figure out why he had such a release, such a happiness, a thing that he knew a person ought to have. He knew there was something more and he hadn't had it. And he was as physically sober as Bill Wilson. And he was staring at him. He says, I know there's something more. What is it? And you can read this in the book Alcoholics Anonymous and Alcoholics Anonymous 3. And all of a sudden, they're sitting there eating tuna fish sandwiches. It's in the book. Not the tuna fish sandwich, since I made that up. But the rest of the stuff is in there. And he's reading that thing, and all of a sudden he sees, he hears, he says, and this is what he puts down. You know, I remember stuff that I heard 25 years ago, like it was yesterday. And stuff that I heard yesterday, I don't remember at all. There's going to be stuff that comes into life, stuff that you're going to hear that's going to absolutely change your life. It may not change your life for 10 years. And there's going to be stuff that's just going to go right over the deal. And this, what he heard, changed his life. He said he called it the golden rule, the golden standard of AA. And this is what he heard Bill Wilson say. He's listening. What is the answer? What is the answer to this deal? What is the great fact, the tremendous fact? What is the thing? What is the one deal? Here's Bill Wilson say this. He says, Henrietta, this is what Bill Wilson says. Henrietta, the Lord has been so wonderful to me, curing me of this terrible disease, that I've got to keep on talking about it. I just got to keep on talking about it and telling other people. I can tell you what, Bill Wilson understood what this program was all about. Rarely have we seen a person fail who has thoroughly followed our path. Are you really want to follow? I have people say, oh yeah, I want to follow his path. How about the invisible path in AA? How about the stuff in AA? I mean, I assume since you guys went to the 1 through 3 one, this is the 4 through 9, that you guys were already on 3. I don't have to worry about 3. Right? You've already learned about 3. There was a section before this where somebody talked about 1, 2, 3. So I've got a whole group of people that are on 3, right? You're willing to, you are solidly on 3. You're willing to do this thing. I was talking to Lou this morning and I said, I don't know what statistics are, but the statistics I know of seem to say 0.5% make more than 20 years in Alcoholics Anonymous. That's 1 out of every 200. He said, I think that's right. And he quoted me some statistics about, you know, the number of chips that are sold as far as white chips, blue chips, 1 year, 2 year, 3 year medallions versus medallions for 20 years and more. And it's about 0.5%. You know, and he says, I think the statistics pretty much hold up the thing. There's a reason why people don't stay sober. You know, everybody comes AA, stays physically sober for a while. There's a reason why some people don't find permanent sobriety. Some people don't find emotional sobriety. There's a reason why I want to run it, that I sponsor guys that are 50 years old, that are 14 years, that are 14 years sober and have the emotional makeup and drives of an angry 14-year-old child. There's a reason why men and women don't grow up, even though they're physically sober in Alcoholics Anonymous. There's a reason why they're spinning plates and their whole life is about people. And their whole life is about their circumstances. And their whole life is about constantly trying to manage their lives in a program where it says you can't manage your own life. And it says people aren't the answer. You know, there's a reason why that happens. And so I have a group of people here, thank God, I think it's great, where you guys are firmly embedded on the third step. And we can start off from there and then we can talk about step 4 through 9. And since you're firmly embedded in the third step, that means it says this. Page 63, when we sincerely took such a position, all sorts of remarkable things followed. We had a new employer, being all-powerful. He provided what we needed if we kept close to him and performed his work well. Let's us agree on where we're starting here. So we don't have to have any arguments about God, because you know the big book says we never apologize for God. Isn't that what it says? We never apologize for God. He is the answer. He is the one. He has all the power. It says, established on such a footing, we became less and less interested in ourselves, our little plans and designs. More and more, we became interested in seeing what we can contribute to life as we felt new power flow in. We enjoy peace of mind as we discovered we could face life successfully as we became conscious of His presence. We began to lose our fear of today, tomorrow, the hereafter. We were reborn. That's not my opinion. That's in the big book. And then the big book says this. This is step 3. This is the step you all did. This is the step you all came from. This is what step 3 says. We were now at step 3. Many of us said to our makers, we understood him, God, I offer myself to thee, to build with me and to do with me as thou wilt. Relieve me of the bondage of self, that I may better do thy will. Take away my difficulties, that victory over them may bear witness to those I would help of thy power, thy love, and thy way of life. May I do thy will always. Every one of you has heard that third step prayer. Probably most of you, since you're here now, have actually done that third step prayer. On your knees or not on your knees, you've done it. Very few of you know the next line after the third step prayer. Very few of you know the next line after the third step prayer. The invisible line. The line, you know, let me tell you a little theory I developed in Alcoholics Anonymous. I have a theory about alcoholics. Why this happens, why there's a disconnect between the fellowship and the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. When I was 25 years old or something, I was married to my first wife, very nice girl. My second wife is here, beautiful, wonderful girl. We've been married for 27 years, 6 grandkids, 4 children. It's been interesting, folks. But I was but with my first wife, I came home one day. I didn't come home. I woke up one day. It was a Friday morning. And she looked me in the eye. And I was a division chief over in the state's attorney's office, one of the chief prosecutors over there. I looked good, I smelled good. I was about 50, 60 pounds lighter than I am now. I had my blue suit on, my red tie, my wife's shirt. You know, I was the pay, you know, listen, I was doing great. I was doing, if you would have asked me, I might, you know, like Ray O'Keefe says, if you would have asked me how I was doing, I would have said I was doing great. I would have told you that whether you asked me or not. But the bottom line is, I get up in the morning, and my wife says to me, this is what she says. She says, you come home drunk one more time, and I'm leaving you. And she said it to me as serious as a heart attack. She didn't want to start an argument. It was almost like an announcement. It was almost like, I thought you ought to know. You come home drunk one time, I'm leaving you. It was a Friday morning, you know, and she said that to me. I listened. It didn't start an argument. There was no argument to be started. She didn't want to hear anything. She walked away. I got in my car. Now, I've got degrees on the wall to tell me how smart I am. I remember I used to tell my sponsor about all my degrees, and he used to say, my first sponsor, he says, you know, Russ, rectal thermometers have degrees, and you know what they do with those. So my wife says that to me. You come home drunk one more time, I'm leaving you. Let me ask something. Is there a simpler way to get that thought across? Can you think of a simpler way of stating that? To get that, do you think a guy who graduated with departmental honors in mathematics, went to law school, was handling major homicide cases in daytime, do you think I could maybe understand that deal? You come home drunk one more time, I'm leaving you. I got to the first light, and this is what I thought. What the hell did she mean by that? Now, here's my theory. This is my theory, folks. On alcoholism. Now listen, here's the theory. I don't know whether it's in the book. I think it is in the book. You know what I think? I think it's in the book on the part of being delusional, though we really don't think so. I think we're delusional. I think we're delusional before we come in here. I think we're delusional for years after we come in here. I know because I've worked with some of you. You know, that's what she said to me. Now here's my theory. My theory is this. When an alcoholic, drunk or sober, in AA or not AA, hears, sees, or is told, or reads something that they do not like, it confuses them. You hear me? I'm going to say it again. Now listen, understand this. When an alcoholic, I have a lot of guys that call me up and says, my sponsor says this, I want your opinion. And I know what they're really trying to say is, I'm confused. Because they're telling me that I should do something that I don't want to do. When an alcoholic hears, sees, or reads something that they don't like or doesn't fit within their philosophy, it confuses them. And so 80% of what they talk about in the book, in order to get to that new freedom, that new happiness, most of you people don't even do or believe because it's just too radical. Because the next line after the third step prayer says this, because why even go to step four if you haven't even done step three? Because it does say in step three, I think, that one of the things that we learn absolutely is that we're alcoholics and we cannot manage our own lives, that no human power could relieve our alcoholism. And that means if you're an alcoholic, you know what it means? It means you can't manage your own life. I know that's confusing. Because you don't like it. You know what it means? It means that no human power, not your wife, not your boss, no human power could relieve your alcoholism. I know that's confusing. You know what it says? It says God could and would if you seek him, if he is sought. I know that's all confusing, but then it says being convinced of that, we're now at step three. You're not convinced of that, you're not there. And then after you say that prayer, and I'm not saying you shouldn't say it, because I'm not even saying I was convinced after I said it, because I think it's a learning process. After you say the prayer, the next line is this. We thought well before taking this step, making sure that we were ready, that we could at last abandon ourselves utterly to him. Nobody sees that line. Ain't nobody here. You go to your group next time and say, listen, Russell says that some guy at the convention said that one of the things the big book says is that when we take step three, one of the things we have to make sure of is that we're ready to abandon ourselves utterly to him. And you watch what the people say. If they say, we don't talk about that stuff, or that's not really true, or they didn't mean that, because you know who wrote that? The same people who said, rarely have we seen a person fail who has thoroughly followed our path. Because you want to know something? You know why they wrote that? Because that's what they did. The same guy who said, the Lord has been so wonderful to me, relieving me of this incredible disease that I have to keep on talking about it and telling people. That guy understood that line, and that's what he did. Why would you expect to get what he got when you're not willing to do what he did because it's just too radical for you, because it sounds too religious, too born again, too anything, too whatever, too not what you want to do? Why don't you just say, why don't we just say the truth? You want to do a little of this program, but you don't want to do the whole thing. Why don't we just tell the truth? You want to change as what you really want to do is change as little as possible and go on with your old lifestyle, but what you want, like a spoiled child, is to receive all the gifts anyway. Because you're a baby and you're not grown up. Why don't we just say that step six, that says this is the step that separates the men from the boys. Any man willing to persevere, a woman willing to persevere enough so that he wants to grow constantly in the image and likeness of his Creator is a person who can be called a real man. Or a real man, woman who's after this thing. And you won't hear that stuff talked about in Alcoholics Anonymous because it's just too, it's too zealous, it's too fanatical, sounds too churchy. But you want to, unfortunately, it's in our literature. Unfortunately, these people put it down because you know why? We deal with a radical mother of a disease. You know, you may call me crazy, but I want to tell you something. I'm excited to be alive. And I'm sober 27 years. So, let's talk about steps 4 through 9. So, let's talk about the minors. Some of you guys have heard this, and I heard this talk by some guy. I was at a meeting once. It wasn't even an AA meeting. It was a Bible study or something. And some guy said this, and I said, Wow. That's incredible. And I started thinking about it, and I started thinking about my life and how it came about, and I said, this is what happened to me, and this is a true story. I looked it up on the internet to make sure it was true. You know, I love true stories. I love true stories. You know, it says, the big book says, our stories disclose in a general way what we used to be like. It says, you know what it says? It says the way we get 1, 2, and 3, that we're alcoholics, can't imagine our own life, the way we get that is not only through the reading of the internet, but by the personal adventures before and after. It says our personal adventures before and after make clear these three pertinent ideas. And by the way, you know what the big book says about our personal stories? It says this, by the way, on page 29. It says, further on, clear gut directions are given showing how we recovered. These are followed by 42 personal experiences. Now listen to this. Listen. It says each individual. They're talking about the stories in the back of the big book. They're talking about the stories that we tell. They're talking about the stories that are supposed to come from this podium. They're talking about the personal testimonies. They're talking about what's important here. Now, I love drunkologues. I love personal experiences so we can identify them. But I understand that all drunkologues are the same. And there's nothing wrong with them. Blah, 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 and then I drank. Blah, 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 and then I drank. Blah, 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 and then I drank. Blah, blah, I drank. I drank, I drank, I drank. I understand the problem. I understand about getting person in that provenance, but the bottom line is, let's face it, where we want to be in is in the solution. It's the solution what's important. Now, I understand what our testimonies are supposed to be according to the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. Our testimonies say this. It says each individual in the personal stories describes in his own language and from his own point of view. This is what I'm doing. I'm just talking about my own language. This is from my point of view after 27 years. Hey, listen, I'm a Jewish kid from New York. Never much of a religious kid. You know what I mean? Worship Playboy magazine and the American Express card. And materialism, okay? I came into Alcoholics Anonymous. I wasn't looking for God. I just didn't want to drink anymore. I looked some guy in the eye and said, I need help. I can't stop drinking. It's about as honest as I can get. He took me into Alcoholics Anonymous, introduced me to the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. I had big book sponsors. I read all the other stuff, Sermon on the Mount and all that sort of deal. I had a hazy, if anything, connection with God. Didn't want to go there, just like Chapter of the Gnostics said. And now, somehow, some way, I can't explain to you how, I'm 27 years sober and I'm a deacon in a Presbyterian church. Go figure that out. And I'm not saying you have to become a deacon in a Presbyterian church or you have to change. I'm just saying this is who I am. I am a result of working this program after 20. What you're looking at is not even me. As if I was up here, we'd be in real trouble. You're looking at the result of 27 years of working this program as hard as I can. So I'm going to blame God on this one. You know what I mean? Further on, clear-cut directions given shown how we come. These are followed by 42 personal experiences. Each individual in the personal stories describes in his own language, from his own point of view, the way he established his relationship with God. It doesn't say the way he did the fifth step or the fourth step or the 17th step. It doesn't say the way he handled a romantic relationship. It didn't say the way he went to meetings or how he got a sponsor. It says each individual in the personal stories, from his own point of view, talks about the way he established his relationship with God. That's the only thing that's important. I have seen guys, it's the one thing that ties everything together. If you think you're doing the fourth step to be psychologically fit and understand yourself, you've tried to do that with a psychiatrist. It never worked. If you think you're doing the fifth step to really understand yourself, because if you really understood yourself, like Roland Hazard, then if you understood the nooks and crannies of your mind, drinking would be impossible. It didn't work for him. It's not going to work for you. If you think you're doing any of these steps for you, you're wrong. You're doing them all for him. Your whole life is about him now. You're forfeited to him. You had the chance. You ran your life. You ran it into the toilet. He's in charge now. I'll tell you one thing. I know who was in charge of my life before I came to AA. I know who was making all the decisions, all the opinions. And you want to know something? I used my best thinking on my best day so that I would win and I would be the winner. And I wound up penniless, hopeless, and I was a drunk. The one thing I want to make sure never happens is that I never get in, that the son of a bitch that was running my life never gets in charge again. This is about, it says turning your will and your life over to the care of God, right? Which your will is basically everything you want to do. And your life is just in case we missed anything. I mean, guy, I say we're going to a meeting. The guy said to me, so, well, I don't want to go today. I said, well, what does that have to do with anything? Okay, so you want to go? We're going anyway. Because it's not about your will anymore. It's about turning it over. It's about doing things that you feel impossible. Well, I don't want to get out. Well, what does that have to do with it? What is what you... When you give up the I don't want to's, this is about what did they want to do. Because, you know, here's the truth, ladies and gentlemen. The truth is, I never wanted what you had. I've never wanted what you've had. I've never been in an A group and said, I want what these guys have. Most of the time in A groups, I say, I don't want anything they have. I want what they had. I want what they had. Every once in a while, I run into somebody in AA, and I look at them, and there's a twinkle in their eye, and I say, I want what he has. Every once in a while. It says, if you want what we have and are willing to go to any length to get it, then you're ready to take certain steps. That assumes that you're not even ready to take the steps until you want what we have, and that assumes you got a we. That assumes there's a person or a group of people that you're looking at. It's not that you put them up on a pedestal. It's not that they're more than human. It assumes that you run into somebody that has something more than not drinking that is just firing your imagination. And so I'm sitting, and so there's this story in the 1860s about this group of miners, and there was a big gold strike. It was not as big as the California gold strike in the 1860s. It was a place, it was gold strike in Alden's Creek, and they had this huge gold strike, and it played out in 1862, and in 1863, a group of 300 miners went out into Crow Territory. Seven miners, including a guy named Bill Featherstone and Fairweather, and a guy named Henry Alden, Edgar, got sort of went out late. They went out with about seven miners following the 300. They got lost. They got captured by the Crow Indians. Six of them escaped. And while they were trying to get back home, they were low on supplies. This is a true story. You can look it up. They camped at a campsite outside of Bannon, Montana, and they saw some rimrock, and a couple of guys started striking it, and they found about $12 worth of gold. And they stayed there for a day, and they mined it, and by the time they were done, they found $200 worth of gold, which back then was like finding $2,000. Like finding $2,000 on the ground! They had hit the strike, they had hit the mother lode, they had hit everything that everybody was looking for. For the next 30 years, more than $200 million of gold was taken out of that creek. But right then, there were six guys, and they didn't have any tools, they didn't have anything. And they knew if anybody found out about this deal, they were dead. They wouldn't be able to work the claim. So they made a pact that they were going to go into town. And that nobody was going to breathe a word of this to anybody. To anybody. They were going to get their supplies, and they were going to meet at the old oak tree. And so they went into town for that one day, and they got all the supplies, and they loaded it up, and they went out by the old oak tree, and as they headed out to the old oak tree, they looked behind them, and there was 300 miners following them. And they knew somebody had spilled the beans. And they finally looked at the leader of that pack, and he says, okay, who talked? How'd you know? And he said, this is what he said. He said, nobody talked. He said, nobody talked. How'd you know? He says, we could see it in your eyes. We could see it in your eyes. We knew, looking at you, that you guys had hit the mother load. And so one day, I'm sitting in a room at the Keystone Keynote Group of Alcoholics Anonymous, and some guy gets up with about 20, 30 years, and his name was Al Kennedy, and I'm about 90 days sober, and he's about 28 or 29 or 30 years sober, and we're both about as physically sober as I am right now. And I'm looking at him, and he's looking at the audience, and he's talking, and I'm looking at a man. You know, I mean, I was always trying to be that, do that man thing. That's kind of a tough deal, trying to figure out how that is. It had something to do, I used to think it had something to do with sex or money or titles or, you know, who you are or what you are, all those plates you got to spin in order to be okay, because you can't be okay without the accoutrements, you know. And the bottom line is, in this guy, I knew this guy. I knew one thing about this guy. I could look at this guy, and I said, I think I know he's one of those guys. He is a man. Because he was strong, but he wasn't arrogant. He was loving, and he was kind, but he wasn't weak. You know, he had a sense of himself. He was transparent. He wasn't worried. I could tell this is a guy who didn't sit around worrying, sucking his... He wasn't a thumb-sucking crybaby. He didn't sit around worrying about himself. He knew who he was. It didn't matter to him whether you liked him or he didn't like him. He was just, this is who I am. He was at peace with himself. And I watched this guy. I looked at this guy, and he got off the stage, or he got off wherever he got off, and he went out the door. And I turned to my sponsor, and I said, boy, that guy was really something. And my sponsor said, you know, he's dying of terminal cancer. And I looked at him, and I said, no, I'm talking about the guy who just did the meeting. Because that didn't register with me. How could that register with me if I had a hangnail that was good for 15 meetings? I mean, I got to register. Come on. No, I said the guy who just did the meeting, Al Kennedy, says, yeah, he's got terminal cancer. I said, I'm talking about the guy who just did the meeting. He said, Russ, he's got terminal cancer. He's got 3 months to live, 3 or 4 months to live. I said, he was just doing a meeting. He says, yeah. He said, he didn't say anything about terminal cancer. I said, I know. He was just trying to help people. He was just telling me. He says, I know. I said, he didn't even look like he had terminal cancer. I said, I know. I said, because I would have at least, like, feigned it, you know, acted weird, so someone would say, what's wrong with you? I got terminal cancer. Just to get a little sympathy, you know what I mean? He didn't even, he says, you know something? Right then and there, I knew there was something going on in this deal. A power that was available to change and transform me, which meant a lot more than just not drinking. And my vision of myself and where I could be and where this program could take me changed. And Al Kennedy became part of my we. You know, the Bible says where there is no vision, the people vanish. I mean, the people perish. They vanish too. In AA. Might as well say that. And he became, and I had a whole body, you know, and I've been following, my deal is I've been following the miners at the old oak tree for 27 years. I've been showing up following those guys. I was never following the gals. I was never following the guys my age. I was always looking to go to the Denny's, the Lums, wherever those guys were that hung around, that had the bellies, that were smoking the cigars or chain smoking the cigarettes, that had the 27 to 30 years. The guys are, and you know, I may not have believed in God, and I may not have understood everything they were saying. I may not have known squat about the steps, but you know, I knew one thing. I knew that I was hanging around with guys who said they believed in God, and they talked about God freely, and they were not ashamed or worried about it. They were not sucking their thumbs saying, well, my group won't let me talk about God. They weren't doing that deal. And I believed in them. And that's who I was hanging around. So now we come to step four. Step four. Hey, come on. I'm going to pull this thing off. You're not going to believe it. I'm going to pull this sucker off. Listen, I got 20, 30 minutes. I'm going to pull this off. You're going to see it. We're going to go through nine like Sherman through Georgia. And you know something? It's all going to be about God. Because you know why? It is all about God. So you don't have to be confused. So step four is my first initiation to life in the spiritual axiom. You know what the spiritual axiom is. Whenever I'm disturbed, no matter what the problem, there's something wrong with me. Now listen to me. Here's the spiritual axiom. Because I know you guys didn't hear it. And I know you guys didn't hear it because it confused you. And I know it confused you because you don't like it. So let me explain it again. Whenever I'm disturbed, no matter what the cause, there's something wrong with me. Now, let me tell you what that means. Are you ready? Write this down. It means, whenever you're disturbed, no matter what the problem, there's something wrong with you.
You have to change. You have to change. And here's the bad part. You have no power to change. You know why? Because you're powerless. But there is one who has all power. Now listen to this. I actually stole this from something. That one is God. May you find him now. Now, I know I'm talking about stuff that you're not allowed to talk about in Alcoholics Anonymous. Because it's like radical, you know? Or you're not supposed to shout it or underline it or talk about it because people might think you're really serious. Like this was like a major part of the program. Because if God comes into your life, he will transform you. And ideas and emotions and attitudes, which were the driving forces of these men's lives, suddenly are shifted off to the side, and they become dominated by a whole different set of ideas, emotions, and attitudes, which means, guys, you stop running around looking for the broads. You stop complaining about them, whining about them, and all that crap that you do. When they have nothing to do with your relationship with God. See to it that your relationship with him is right, and you know something, you'll have good relationships with women. See to it that your relationship with him is right, and you know something, you'll have good relationship with people. If your relationship with him, the number one relationship is your relationship with him, that's what all these steps stand for, and if it's not right with him, nothing else is ever going to go right in your life. That's what the program of Alcoholics Anonymous is about. Put him first. Seek ye first the kingdom of God, and all the things will be handled. It'll all be given to you. So that's our first introduction, step four, to life in the spiritual axiom. That's the 10th step spiritual axiom. It's also the 4th step spiritual axiom. I did my four step 18 months and 2 hours. It took me 18 months and 2 hours. 18 months of whining, crying, fetching, all this sort of crap. And you know, I think the way, I don't know why I did it. I did it because I was scared. I did it because I was going nuts. I did it because I didn't want to drink. I did it because I wanted what they had. I did it. I didn't want to do it. I balked at it. And then one day I went to a meeting, and for the 18th time I said, I'm scared, I'm frightened, I feel crap, I feel like I'm going to drink, and I don't know, I know I have to do the 4th step, but I don't know what, blah, blah, blah. And some guy said to me, he says, why don't you shut up and just pick up a pencil? Well, people had told me a lot of things. They had told me some psychological stuff. They had told me something. They had patted me on the back. Nobody ever told me to pick up a pencil. Nobody had ever told me that. Nobody had ever yelled. Nobody had said, pick up a pencil. And I said, pick up a pencil. It's pretty simple, too, you know? Unless you don't want to do it, right? And I went home and I picked up a pencil, and 2 hours later I was done with my 4th step. It may not have been the greatest 4th step. It doesn't say it has to be the perfect 4th step. It was a 4th step. And that was it. And I did it. T.S. Eliot says, there's a saying by T.S. Eliot says, now I want you to follow this, because you may not understand anything I'm saying, and that's okay, but 20 years from now, it may make sense to you. I heard this 20 years ago. It didn't make any sense to me. But it so intrigued me, I kept on remembering it and remembering it and remembering it. And now I'm 27 years sober, and now it makes all the sense in the world. Is that crazy? I heard a guy named Johnny Harris speak 25 years ago. He said something that didn't make any sense to me. 27 years later, it makes all the sense of the world. It came into, everything's come into focus for me. T.S. Eliot's statement was this. He said, it was in a poem called The Wasteland. He said, we will not cease our exploration. Isn't that what we're doing here? We're exploring. That's what your whole life is about, exploring. Maybe this girl will do it. Maybe this guy will do it. Maybe this child will do it. It's all about exploration. We will not seek our exploration. And in the end of all our exploring, we will come back to the place where we started, having known the place for the first time. At the end of our exploring, we'll come back to the place where we started, having known the place for the first time. And when I first came with Alcoholics Anonymous, here's the deal. You see, unfortunately, they should have asked me to do this meeting when I really understood the steps and when I really knew the steps and I really did the steps. You know, when I had 15 years and 10 years, I used to do dynamite step meetings. I do crummy ones now. I mean, they really do. You guys are getting shortchanged because I used to tell people how to do the steps. People don't need to know how to do the steps. It's in the book. You can ask your sponsor. But I used to tell them how to do the steps. I used to tell them how I did it on my steps. I used to tell them all about the steps. We used to go through step 3, step 4, step 5. I used to sit down with them, explain each step to them. There's nothing wrong with that. I knew everything about the steps. And they were discrete things. I'm doing step 3. Now we're doing step 4. Now we're doing step
8. Now we're doing step 9. I knew what they were. They were so clear. They were discreet little things that you did. I'd be going on in my life, and I'd say something to somebody. I'd say, oh, that was a step 9. You know, I'd just say, oh, that was a step 4. Oh, I need the step 4 this. I need the step 3 this. My whole life was about, well, what's that? What cubbyhole do I put that one in? That's step 3 this. Nothing wrong with that. The steps were so clear to me. My life was divided up. Sometimes I'd say, well, I think that's a step 9 and a step 3. You know what I mean? And I do them, and I do them, and I do them, and I do them, and I write them, and I do them. And then after a while, I started doing them without thinking about them. And then after a while, I started just like doing them. Then all of a sudden, they started becoming like sort of automatic. I mean, I guess I was doing them, and I didn't know I was doing them. And then the more I do them, did them, the more I did them, the more I just kept on thinking about him. You know who he is. I kept thinking about him. And I do them some more, and I think more about him. I do even more of them, and I start thinking about him. You know, in Vision for You, it says this at the end of Vision for You. This is the vision. This is what it says. It says, still you may say, but I will not have the benefit of contact with you who write the book. We cannot be sure. God will determine that. So you must remember that your real reliance is always upon Him. Did you know your real reliance is upon Him? He will show you how to create the fellowship you crave. Do you know that who you hang out with, who you want to be with, and I was told the person you'll be, the man you'll be 5 years from now will be dependent on the people you hang out with and the books you read. And I can tell you this, the books you read will be dependent on the people you hang out with. So it's all about who you hang with. Did you know who you hang with and who you want to hang out with will depend upon Him? And how much you turn your life over to Him. It says, our book is made to be suggestive only. We realize you know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask Him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order, but obviously cannot transmit something you cannot have. See to it that your relationship with Him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and talents others. This is the great fact. Apparently, He is important. Apparently, the whole book rises, sets, falls, and ends up with Him. Abandon yourself to God. There He is again, as you understand God. Admit your faults to Him. There He is, and your fellows. Clear away the records of past. Give freely what you find. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit. Hey, there's a lot of people in the fellowship of AA. You know what it takes to be in the fellowship of AA is say, I'm an alcoholic. Or you don't even have to say that. I have a desire to stop drinking. Very few people in the fellowship of the Spirit. Trust me on that one. That's a different fellowship, different qualifications. We shall be with you, and we'll surely meet some of us as you trudge roads to happy. God bless you and keep you until then. It's all about Him. And as I'm working these steps and working these steps and working these steps, I suppose I'm still working them. I think I am. I just don't think about them much. Maybe when I'm talking to somebody or I'm sponsoring, I just think about Him. I don't think there's something wrong. I don't suck my thumb and say, gee, I must be a bad AA-er. So all I do is want to talk about Him. Like that guy Bill Wilson. The Lord has been so grateful to me, so kind to me, lifting this disease from me, that I just want to keep on talking about Him and telling other people. I'll bet he would understand me. I'll bet Dr. Bob, when he said in his story, if you're an atheist, an agnostic, have some sort of intellectual pride that keeps you from accepting what's in this book, I feel sorry for you. Your Heavenly Father will never let you down. I'll bet he would understand what I was talking about. I'll bet Bill Dotson would understand what I was talking about. I'll bet the first 100 would understand what I was talking about. But you see, I'm all wrong. That's why what I want to tell you. I'm absolutely all wrong. Because the other day, I had a guy come out to see me. I mean, he was walking from the car room, and he said, oh, you're Russell. I hear you're a pretty good speaker. He says, but they say you talk too much about God. And he was a newcomer, so I guess he said that because somebody told him that. So I guess I must be wrong, and they must be right. Because I guess in Alcoholics Anonymous, I guess what the deal is, you're not supposed to talk about God. You're not supposed to talk about this book. You're not supposed to talk what's really in it. Because I guess it upsets people and makes them uncomfortable. It upsets people. And the last thing we want to do is upset people or ask them to change in any radical way that will make them uncomfortable. Maybe we should let them just sort of go to meetings like they went to the bars and talk and squawk and suck their thumbs and do the group therapy sort of thing and then walk out making believe that they're actually getting better. Maybe we ought to do it that way, and that way we don't break any eggs, you know what I mean? Make any omelets or anything like that. So, we're still on step 4, but we're going to step 5. I got 10 minutes. I'm going to wrap this thing up. Page 28. I'm gonna do this sucker. Page 28 of the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous.
If what we have learned and felt and seen means anything at all, it means that all of us, remember what I said this thing was about freedom. We're going to get to the freedom. If what we have learned and felt and seen means anything at all, it means that all of us, whatever our race, creed, or color, are the children of a living creator with whom we may form a relationship upon simple and understandable terms as soon as we are willing and honest enough to try. With whom we may form a relationship. What is step four about? Step four is about doing those things, removing those obstacles, so he can come in and you can form that relationship. Those things that block out what? The sunshine of the Spirit. Who are they talking about except him? Will they capitalize that? You know what it says? In step three and four, here's what it says. Here's the deal. And you need to remember this because it plays on later on in the steps. It says, this is the how and why of it. Now, are you getting this? This is the how and why of it. Now, if you want to complain to me in New York, write the letter. This is what you say. There's a guy named Russell in Miami quoting the big book and screwing everybody up. This is the how and why of it. First of all, we had to quit playing God, which means we quit relying on ourselves, we quit worshiping our own strength, we quit thinking about ourselves and what we want to do, we quit playing God. It didn't work. Next, we decided that here and after this drama life, God was going to be our director. He is the principal. We are his agents. He is the father. We are his children. I don't want to argue the point with you. I'm not going to argue the point with you. You know what I'm going to say if you argue the point with me? I say, fine, do it your way. I'm not going to argue this with you. You don't like it? Do it your way. We'll meet back here in 5 years. You know, he's like a giant self-cleaning oven. Every 2 years, the horse shit burns off. We'll talk about sobriety. This thing gets proved out in sobriety. You know, I'm not saying this group, but 10 years down the road, you know, 80% of these people won't even be here. And the ones that are here, 50% of those are going to be unhappy. Going through the 18th divorce or whatever it is, they're going to be going, their life is going to be miserable. And there's going to be one or two guys, one or two gals, that are going to have that spark in their lives. They're going to be like the miners. And I'm not going to have any problem explaining this to them because they're going to be doing it. They're going to be doing it. And I'm only talking to the guy and the gal out there that's actually going to be doing that. I'm not even talking to you guys. I'm talking because I know there's one guy or one gal out there that is actually interested in this stuff. And the rest are saying, gee, I think he's going to go over. Don't matter. He is the Father and we are his children. Now listen, most good ideas are simple. Not for alcoholics. Remember, when they hear something they don't like, it confuses them. Most good ideas are simple. And this concept, now listen to this, because this is going to come up later on. This is important. And this concept, what concept? That God is the answer. We are his children. He is the director. We do what he wants us to do. As a matter of fact, later on it says, when we took such a position, he is a new employer. This is what it says. He provided what we needed if we kept close to him and performed his work well. We have to keep close to him. You start telling me your problems about your girlfriend, your boyfriend, you know what I want to say to you? What does this have to do with keeping close to him and performing his work? Well, I said, no. What is? Aren't you an AA? Yeah. Didn't you do the third step? It says, what is what your girlfriend's doing has to do with keeping close to him? And what? You don't want to talk about that. You just want to talk about managing your life and managing your girlfriend and managing your love life and doing the same crap and beliefs you came into like a 14-year-old child before you even entered Alcoholics Anonymous without growing up whatsoever. You want to talk about the crap. I don't want to talk about the crap. I want to talk about the solutions. You're never going to be able to manage your girlfriend, your wife, or anything like that. You better trust in God and clean house. You better be dependent upon him. He says he's all-powerful. We're not even dealing with the higher power. We're dealing with the highest power. There's only one of those. It says, here's the deal. Now, remember this. This is an important deal. Okay, I'm going to come back to it. He is the Father, and we are his children. Most good ideas are simple, and the concept was the keystone. This is the keystone. You don't get this, you don't get anything. It's the keystone of the new and triumphant archway, through which we pass to freedom. To freedom. Woo. This thing I'm talking about, this is how we get free. I don't know what they're talking about in Alcoholics Anonymous these days. I think they're talking about problems and sucking their thumbs and girlfriends. They're not talking about this stuff, are they? No, of course not. So then it goes on in step five. In step five, what does it say? Okay, you know what it says on page 68? This is even better. 68 gets even better. It gets even crazier. They get even wackier. Let me find this thing. 68. See, that's what I like. I don't have to go crazy because they were crazy. Page 68. This is like with 4 and 5. This is 4 and 5. This is what they say. Perhaps there is a better way.
We think so, for we are now on a different basis, the basis of trusting and relying upon God. We trust infinite God rather than our finite selves. We are in the world to play the role He assigns, just to the extent that we do as we think He would have us, and humbly rely on Him, does He enable us to match calamity with serenity. Now, how many people in AA do you think are really doing this stuff? How many people in AA do you think are really working the program these guys wrote down here? How about 5%? 1%? 1%. 1% believe in this stuff, do this stuff, and even talk this stuff. The rest of the people are scared because they're still sucking their thumbs, worried about what other people think about them. Because they still haven't experienced that, you know, where it says fear of people and economic security will leave them. Not only are they still scared of economic insecurity, they're scared of not only people, they're scared of the people in AA, judging them. So they can't even stand the truth. They can't even say the truth because they're worried about what other people think about them. What a crummy way to live your life. I lived my life like that for 31 years. You know, spending more money on my credit cards, buying things that I couldn't afford, that I didn't even need, for people I didn't even like, you know, to impress people I didn't even like. I lived my life worried about people on my mind, waking up with people on my line. I don't want, that isn't a new freedom, that's a bondage. You know, this is not a dress rehearsal. I don't want to go to the end of my life, living somebody else's life, for a life I think somebody else wants me to have. We never apologize. Hey, maybe I should apologize to you for talking too much about God. But then again, if I did that, I wouldn't be true to this, where it says we never apologize to anyone for depending upon our Creator. We can laugh at those who think spirituality is the way of weakness, paradoxically is the way of strength. The verdict of the ages is that faith means courage. All men of faith have courage. They trust their God. You know why I can say this crap to you? Because I'm not scared of y'all. You know, there's only one thing I fear. There's only one thing I care about. It has nothing to do with you. Because you are not about involved getting, you're not involved in getting me or keeping me sober. It's not about you. We never apologize for God. Instead, we let Him demonstrate through us what He can do. We ask Him to remove our fear and direct our attention to what He would have us be at once we commence to outgrow fear. Page 99 says, it's all about our partnership with Him. Did you know that? On page 99 of the book, it says right here, page 99. Says, let no alcoholic say he cannot recover unless he has his family back. This justice and so on. In some cases, the wife will never come back for one reason or another. Remind the prospect his recovery is not dependent upon people. It is dependent upon, you guessed it, his relationship with God. It goes on to say, the minute we put our work on a service plan, the alcoholic commences to rely on our assistance rather than upon God. He clamors for this or that, claiming he cannot master alcohol unless his material needs are cared for. All you guys do, and I don't mean you personally, but all we do in AA is sit around talking about how we're worried about our material needs. How we're worried about the circumstances of our lives. He clamors for this or that, claiming he cannot master alcohol, his material needs are cared for. Nonsense! Some of us have taken very hard knocks to learn the truth. Job or no job, wife or no wife, we simply do not stop drinking so long as we place dependence upon people ahead of dependence upon God. And this is what it says, in case you're worried about newcomers, scared away newcomers. In working with others, you know what it says? It says, burn the idea. Burn it. It doesn't say, softly tell them, kind of explain to them. I mean, we got one book in the whole book, one chapter in the whole book, it's chapter to the agnostics, talks to the non-believers, and the whole thing can be boiled down in one sentence. Get over it. AA takes a position. God, there's a God. There either is God or isn't God. He's either all or nothing. We can't duck the issue. AA, by the way, comes down in favor of the God thing. Burn the idea in the conscience of every man that he can get well regardless of anyone. The only condition that he trusts in God and clean house. Moving on, real fast. I'll wrap up the next ones in 10 minutes, okay? Boy, is that bullshit. Okay, here we go. Okay, step 5, we come out of isolation and truly stop playing God. Understand and trying to worship myself on my and operate on my own strength. Because I'm bringing, it's easy to say God this and God this, to bring another person in. Doing it, we stop doing it alone. You know, we stop dropping those plates. And I'm not going with the plate thing. You'll have to wait for another meeting on that. You know what step 5 says? You know, this is interesting. This is what step 5 says. And you guys will understand this now. This is why this is so clear. It's so clear. You have to not want to see it. Here's what step 5 says. Right before step 5, you know what they say? Tell me if this is inconsistent with every single thing this book stands for and every single thing it says. What is the most important thing? What am I saying? The most important things these steps are for, the number one thing in your life. Your relationship with God. Here's step 5. Now we're at step 5. We're not in step 3 now. We're on step 5. Having made our this is the first line into action. Having made our personal inventory, what shall we do about it? Now listen to this.
We have been trying to get a new attitude, a new relationship with our Creator, and to discover the obstacles in our path. Did you know you were doing that? You see, most people don't even know they're doing that. They think it's some sort of group therapy or psychological thing. Did you know this whole thing was about God? This whole thing was about a relationship with God. This whole thing is about believing in God and having faith in God, so developing a faith that will solve all your problems. Did you know that? Did you know that every step is about that and removing the obstacles so God can come in? Did you know that? You know, most people don't know that. You think it's funny. Most people in AA don't know that because they don't talk about this in AA because people will get upset. What do you do about a fellowship that has a basic text that they don't talk about? Is there any wonder that nobody stays sober compared to the way they used to stay sober in Alcoholics Anonymous? You know what it says on page 62? I'm going to go on to the next. Okay, step six. I already talked about separating the men from the boys. You know, what is separating the men from the boys? It says, in defining what a man is and what the boys are, it says, the men are the ones that are sincerely trying to grow in the image and likeness of his Creator. Hey, guess what, boys and girls? Not my language, their language. Trying to sincerely grow in the image and likeness of our Creator. Compare that to the third step where it says we're ready to turn ourselves utterly over to Him. Compare that to the statement made by Bill to Henrietta while sitting in that kitchen. Step seven, we learned about humility. I had a gal ask me to talk about the car wash, and I'm going to do that in 30 seconds. I mean, this is what step seven is. Step seven is being crushed, being changed. Step seven is about changing. Changing and being crushed by, hey, listen, you don't do step seven. Step seven is done to you. You know, step seven happens. You just hang around life long enough, trying to stay on the conveyor belt of life through that car wash, trying to get this thing done, always focused on Him, always doing this, no matter what's going on in circumstances of life. Step seven, you know what that says in step seven? We're going to learn the true, you're going to like this one, we're going to learn the true value of suffering. You know, most people in AA come to AA because they don't want to suffer. They come to AA because they don't want to learn pain. They come to AA because they want to change, but they want to do it painlessly. That's what alcohol does. That's what drugs does. It changes your perception painlessly. You know how AA does it? It changes it through crushing. It says, what does it say in the 12 and 12? How do we get a new perspective? Through 1,000 forms of crushing and the final of humiliation and the final crushing of our self-sufficiency. Let me ask some boys and girls, does that sound painless to you? Does that sound... No. You know what it sounds like to me? Foreclosed on the house. It sounds to me like homeless. It sounds to me like no money. It sounds to me like your girlfriend or boyfriend left you. It sounds to me that you learn how to stay sober and look to Him and turn to Him because He's the only thing you got because you realize your boyfriend left or your girlfriend left or you can never rely on anybody. It sounds like being left... But the one person that you thought would always come through to you, it sounds like that person letting you down and turning them back on you and stabbing you in the back, and so you don't know where to go to either drink, kill yourself, or turn to Him. It sounds like going through life and being crushed and smashed and refined until you are pushed into the only place you can be looking to Him because there's nothing else. It sounds like getting through that, it sounds like weeding out the pretenders and the crybabies. That's what it sounds like to me. And it says here, step seven is about humility. I talk about the car wash. I started on one end of the car wash, all dirty and crappy and everything. I go through the car wash, and I go in the car wash. You ever been in one of those car washes? There's guys, this is my life, and they're beating me with mallets. They're beating the crap out of me. It's killing me. Key is just stay on the conveyor belt. Always look at Him and stand, no matter what, stay on the conveyor belt. You fall off, get back on the conveyor belt. After a while, they're beating me, I'm getting halfway through, and all of a sudden the beating doesn't feel so bad. By the time I'm getting out of the conveyor belt, all of a sudden it's sort of feeling like a Swedish massage. At the end of the conveyor belt, it's feeling pretty good. I get out of the conveyor belt, I says, I think I'll try that sucker again. You go through that stuff, you look at Him, He puts you in a place, He transforms you so life can't touch you. Some famous guy a long time ago, he says, in this world you'll have problems, but be of cheer, I've overcome the world. And the Apostle Paul said, I've learned to be content in all things. Why do you think he said that? He said he wrote that from a Roman jail. You know, there are some people like Al Kennedy that could be dying of
terminal cancer, you wouldn't even know that somebody told you, because they'll just go to the AA meeting and they'll talk and they won't even tell you about their problems, because you know some of them are not problems to them, because they're light afflictions, because they're free of this world. Because they don't think like you do. They don't act like you. They don't behave like you. They don't worry like you. Because they know a new freedom and they know a new happiness. Fear of people and economic insecurity has left them. Because they're on a different deal. You know why? Because they're members of the Fellowship of the Spirit and they're free and they're emotionally sober. Because they've got this deal. They've got this deal down. Step 8 and 9, it's all about faith. You know, it's all, you know what it says? The starting of faith, 8 and 9, the first line, it says, faith without works is dead. We can't live on dead faith. 2,000 years ago, some guy said, hey, listen, if you want to worship God, you got something against your brother? He says, you fix up the deal with your brother first, then come and worship me. It's the rules. I don't make them. You know, if it was my rules, it would say you don't ever have to apologize or say you did something wrong to the son of a bitch. But that's the rules. It's the rules. It's God's rules. It's His rules. Have the courage. Screw up your courage. Look at me. And none of this, I didn't do I'm sorry. I never did the I'm sorry deal. I had to actually go up to people and I had to say I was wrong. Because I did I'm sorry when I was drinking. I did I'm sorry. I had to say I was wrong. And then you know what I had to do? I had to tell them why I was wrong. I couldn't even just say a general I was wrong. I was wrong for calling you this name. I was wrong for taking your money. Which meant I had to actually know what the hell I did was wrong. And you know, when I started knowing what I did was wrong and keeping up walking out and saying what I did was wrong and keep on going through the pain and the leveling of pride to say what I do is wrong, you know, after a while I got sick of that, I decided to not do anything wrong again. Try to act better. Not that I'm perfect at this deal. And you know, when I start, you know, my sponsor once told me when I was talking about somebody behind their back, he said, this is alcohol, because that's all I did, talk about people behind their back. That's all I did was carry. You know what my sponsor said to me? He says, this is AA, we don't talk about people behind their back. So if you don't have anything nice to say about somebody, why don't you just shut up? And I was mad at him, and I was pissed at him, and I didn't want to do it. And you know what I started doing? I started, but I didn't want to leave AA. And I didn't want to leave him, so I stopped talking about people behind their back. I started saying nice things about people. One time I was with a group of people, they were talking about somebody behind their back. I turned to them and I said, we don't talk about people behind their back. I didn't start saying, you know what happened when I started talking about people behind their back? I stopped thinking bad things about people behind their back. You know what happened when I stopped thinking about bad things about people behind their back? I started feeling bad about people behind their back. You know what happened? I started feeling better. You know what happened? It removed all those blockages and the sunshine of the Spirit. My relationship to Him got closer and I changed. Now, how would I have known if I all my life I've been saying crap and gossip about people? How would I have ever known if my mouth and what comes out of my mouth is greatly dependent upon how I grow spiritually and allow Him? I would have never known that unless that son of a bitch told me we don't talk about people behind their back in AA. So there's a lot of people that come to AA and they stop drinking. They don't know how to stop gossiping. They don't know how to stop saying crap and criticizing people behind their back. You know what page? You know what page 77 says after all this 8 and 9 stuff? This is 8. This isn't 3 now. We're now on page 77. We're almost done here. Page 77. After all the 8 and 9 stuff. Yeah, you guessed it. It's about Him again. They talk about 8 and 9, doing 8 and 9. And this is what they said. At the moment, we are now trying. This is why we do 8 and 9. We are trying to put our lives in order. But this is not an end in of itself. You see, you think it's about getting your life, but it's not an end in of itself. And this is what they say. Our real purpose, you want to know what the real purpose is? You can guess this. What do you think our real purpose is? To fit ourselves to be of maximum service to God. There He is again. And the people about us. Every step you want to know about 4 through 9, trust God, clean house, turn yourself entirely, utterly over to Him. Do whatever He is. Go wherever you go. If they're talking about Him, hang out with Him. Hang out with the people who are talking about Him. Read the books that talk about Him. Get a voracious diet. Do everything. When you're doing something, say, is this about Him? Get crazy. Don't worry about whether people criticize you. Don't worry about it. They're going to be drunk anyway. They're not going to get this program anyway. They're not about this deal anyway. They're not people you should worry about anyway. Why are you so codependent? Do you really want to go to Al-Anon or something? I mean, how bad can it get? And then you finally get, after you do all that stuff on step 9, it says, you know, finally we're on step 9 now. I mean, you thought we'd never get there. I'm only 5 minutes over. I'm not even that. We started late. Now we go to step 9. Step 9. Now this is, you're going to like this one. After step 9, page 83. Now this is going to be a shocker for you.
If we are painstaking about this phase of our development, if we are painstaking about all this stuff, we're going to be amazed before we're halfway through. We're going to know a new freedom and a new happiness. Now you're going to have the new freedom. You know, if you don't have the new freedom and the new happiness, if you don't have this yet, say, I don't have this yet, it's because you're not doing it. Or maybe you're doing it and it hasn't, all the pieces haven't come together yet. You know, remember what T.S. Eliot said? This stuff takes time. You know, things that were clear to me now. You see, when I had 15 years, when I had 10 years, when I had 5 years, when I had 16 years, it was all about the steps. This would have been an entirely different talk. At 27 years, it's all about him. It's so clear it's about him. I read the book. I read what's in the book. I say, how could anybody miss this? There are people here right now. Believe me, there are people here right now. He says, I didn't know that. It's so clear. Well, I never saw that. How could I miss that? Things that didn't, and it's not because I'm stupid, things that didn't make any sense at 10 years are so clear to me now. It simplifies everything. If we are painstaking about this phase of our development, we will be amazed before we're halfway through. We are going to know a new freedom, a new happiness. It's all about freedom. We will not regret the past, nor wish to shut the door with it. We will comprehend the word serenity. We'll know peace. Don't you want that stuff? No matter how far down the scale we have down, we will see what our experience can benefit others. That feeling of uselessness and self-pity will disappear. We will lose interest in selfish things and gain interest in our fellows. Self-seeking will slip away. Our whole attitude and outlook upon life will change. Fear of people and of economic insecurity will leave us. We will intuitively know how to handle the situation which used to baffle us. Now get this. This is what it says. We will suddenly realize that God is now doing for us what we could not do for ourselves. It's all about Him. He did the change. He's the one who makes the change. You guys are trying to work a program of recovery. Why? What are you working? You can't do it. You can't work yourself. You know, don't you understand the chapter in the Gnostics says, if a mere code of morals or a better philosophy of life or understanding this better or being smarter worked for us, we'd have been sober a long time ago. They didn't work for us. We had the problem is we had a lack of power. We had to find a power greater than us. And then we wrote this book. And obviously we're going to talk about God. Why doesn't anybody get this thing? It's all about Him. It's not about the perfect four-step or the perfect eight. You know, everybody I know who has drank after coming into Alcoholics Anonymous, I've seen them drink at 20 years and 50. Everyone I know, maybe not everyone, but most of the ones I know that has drank after coming into Alcoholics Anonymous, has drank after a period of sobriety. Everyone I know who has drank after coming into Alcoholics Anonymous has drank after going to AA meetings. Many people I know who have drank after coming to Alcoholics Anonymous have drank, you ready for this, after working the steps. I know guys who have drank after teaching the steps. You can do the steps. There's only one. What can you say about a guy who mechanically does the steps? Everybody does the steps and also does the steps, but loses sight of why you do the steps. You know, if the whole thing is to create a relationship with God and you do the steps and you don't have that relationship, what does that mean? You announce to the group how you did the steps? You feel like you did the steps, so now you can manage your life better? You've done the steps, so now you're cured? I mean, what does that mean? It's like Roland Hazard. When he left Dr. Young and he said, not having known the inner workings of his mind, he knew he could face life, he wouldn't drink again. Within 3 weeks, he was drunk. He came back to Roland Hazard. He said, what's wrong with me? Roland Hazard said, it's a phenomenon. You have to find God. It's something else. You can't do it. That's what we're about. That's what this whole book is about. You know, everybody here is trying to do the perfect step and the perfect thing, and the only guy that's going to win is the guy who sees a group of people that they want what they have, and this group is the kind of group that was in this book, and sees Bill Wilson, sees who these people really were. Not who you think they are. Read their writing. See who they were. These guys read the Bible for 4 years, for God's sakes. When they say, rarely have we seen a person fail who's thoroughly followed our path, during that 4 years, they didn't read the big book. It wasn't written. They read the Bible. These people were involved. They were intense believers. They were faithful. They prayed. They were on their knees. They were into this stuff. You know, you want what they have? Why don't you really see what they were instead of making up in your own mind what you think they were? They weren't like you. They weren't like you. Bill Wilson devoted his entire life. Dr. Bob devoted his entire life. Read their writings. Read these statements that I'm reading from you. Listen. As much as you think this has something to do with me, 90% of the stuff I said to you today are the writings of Bill Wilson, Dr. Bob, that was passed through that were approved, that are conference approved material. 90% is conference approved material, and 10% is my experience. This is the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. I don't care what your group say or what your fellowship is. This is the program. What do you want me to tell you? Do you want to be a poly? I mean, I'm asking, you know, sometimes you go to court and you say, well, gee, I don't want to offend anybody as if I give a shit. But I mean, you know, I don't want to offend somebody. You know, but you know something? I've got to be true to AA. I can't give out crap. You know what I mean? Now, of course, it's from my own point of view. I understand that. There could be people who disagree. Obviously, I think they're wrong, but, you know. So, in any event, hey, we've come to the end of our little deal. You know what I mean? And, hey, listen, you know, the only thing I want to say at the end is, this is, I really do believe it's like a giant toolbox. I believe, you know, that, you know, I'm saying this stuff, and obviously, as you could probably guess, I think it'd be an understatement to say I'm pretty strong on the God thing. But, you know, that's okay. I'm just one voice. There's a lot of people that aren't strong on it, right? There's a lot of people that tell you that's a bunch of crap and don't want to hear. That's right. You're going to hear all those voices. You're entitled. You know, listen, you've paid your money. This is your life. You are absolutely entitled to hear every point of view. Some guy wants to get up here and says atheism is okay, even though that's not what it's. That's fine. You're entitled to listen to anything you want to listen and do whatever you want to do. I'm going to say my deal. I'm going to sing my song, my experience. Because here's the deal. You don't have to do anything about what I said, but at least you heard it. Some of you heard it. Somebody did. Some of you don't think they heard it. In 6 months from now, it'll come back. But 2 years from now, when you're on your third treatment center and your fourth divorce, and nothing's going right for you, and everything's going wrong, and you can't stop drinking, you may think back on this thing that you never did and never tried and never wanted to try. You may say, maybe that son of a bitch was right. What do I got to lose? I'm 45, I'm 55, I'm 60 years old. Why am I wasting? Why don't I try? What if he was right? What if it works? And then it'll all be worth it to me. So thank you. God bless you all.